Hello and welcome to a Game Informer podcast extra. My name is Ben Reeves. I'm your host. And today we're just going to do a little bit something different. We often have a lot of fun conversations with friends in the industry, and we'd like to take a chance to share some of those conversations with you. So coming up, we have an interview between myself and Alex Stadnick with The Last of Us Part 2's director Neil Druckmann and narrative lead Hallie Gross. This game is obviously a big deal this year. It's one of the summer's biggest releases, and it's generated a ton of buzz. So we talked to Neil and Hallie about their process, how they put the game together, and some of the things that changed along the way. It's actually a really interesting conversation, and I hope you think so too. But needless to say, we don't shy away from any spoilers, so consider this a spoiler warning. Don't go any further if you haven't played the game. I highly recommend it. I don't know how often we'll actually put out interviews like this one, but if you enjoy it and just want to tell us what you think, feel free to drop us a line at podcast@gameinformer.com. And with that, I'll leave you to it. Enjoy the interview. And welcome. I'm Ben Reeves. I'm joined by Alex Stadnick.
Hello, friends.
How's it going, sir?
Good.
We got two very special guests, two good friends here with us today. We have Neil Druckmann and Hallie Gross. How's it going, guys?
Hello.
Woo.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, great. Obviously, you guys are famous for The Last of Us Part 2, which recently came out. Congrats on putting that game out.
Thank you. Nice piece of work.
Yes. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
It has to feel so good to put that out after like working on something. I have to get this every month with a magazine, but I only work on that for like a month. So I can't imagine something you've worked on for years of your life to finally have it come out. That has to be so satisfying.
I don't think I've processed it yet, Neil. Have you?
I've definitely felt every emotion possible came out specifically.
I don't doubt that.
But no, I'm like Hallie, I haven't had a chance to rest yet. Part of it is just doing PR. Part of it is just prepping future things. And soon I want to take a break. And I think that's when it's the realization that it's over is going to hit. And usually that follows a little bit of a depression before you come back out and get excited about the next big thing. But there's definitely a little bit of postpartum there.
We're only adding to your workload here. We're adding to the problem of you not being able to take a break.
This is actually fun. I love talking about the game. You know, we've been working on it for so long, so to finally be able to talk about it, not worry about spoilers or anything, there's a freedom to that.
Sure, we're sick of talking to each other about it. It's nice to talk to people who
aren't
us. Shut up.
Great. Well, I would love to just start at the beginning with actually the first game, because when the first game came out, there's a lot of people who said, like, you know what, I don't even want a sequel, don't even bother with it. And full disclosure, I'm one of those idiots. I put a blog up once and said, hey, I don't want a sequel to The Last of Us. And thank you for proving me wrong.
Yes.
But just from you guys and your perspective, when did you realize you wanted to make a sequel? Was it when you had the core concept for the idea? Did you have to convince yourself? Did you have to convince anybody on the team that this game deserved a sequel?
It kind of came while we were finishing the first one, and it was kind of funneled through Ellie, that Ellie was such an interesting character that developed over the course of making the first game. And it was exciting to think about telling more stories with her and seeing more of her evolution and dimensions. And the first step of that was actually doing the comic book, American Dreams, which was like, okay, we're going to go backwards in time and see a different version of Ellie. And then while developing that, got the idea for the DLC, Left Behind. And that's where, like, the first time I felt nervous, thinking like, oh, we're going to screw up The Last of Us. Like, The Last of Us had already come out and was more successful than we had anticipated. It resonated with people in a more visceral and positive way than we had anticipated. And there was a fear that with Left Behind, we will have proven that was a one-trick pony and everything else sucks, and we will tarnish the whole thing. While in that time span as well, while working on Left Behind, got some of the early ideas for Last of Us Part 2. But I think what, like, with Left Behind being successful and showing that we can expand into that world through Ellie specifically, it gave us the confidence to keep going forward and tell a bigger, more ambitious, risky story like we did with The Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah, sure. And then so, Hallie, when you came on board, what was the state of things? Like, was the story somewhat fleshed out?
So Neil had some tentpole moments. He had, or we're allowed to talk spoilers, right?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Open discourse.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had the Joel death as the inciting incident. He had playing as both characters flipping POV. It had a different ending. But sort of those main beats and that Ellie was going to go and hunt down these people was already there when I joined. So for me, it was more about connective tissue.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Do you feel like you brought anything specific to the table or specific, like, oh, this is the thing I'm proud of bringing?
Oh, man. I mean, there's so much in the game that I'm proud of to have been just like even a little part of, you know. So I think what's nice about the studio is like so many people touch so many facets of this game that it's sort of hard to say like, oh, that's something I did. You know, it's like everybody contributed sort of everywhere. So I'm just sort of holistically proud, I think.
Well, I'm gonna do something that'll probably shock Hallie.
Are you gonna say something nice?
I'll compliment her.
You're gonna say something.
Which is like there's so much
this
of like
is, let's all hold on to
this. This history.
You're gonna lose so it.
Like the tone, and it's a more complex story than we've ever told. And I think so much of the work is kind of invisible, because it's not dialogue. It's like about multiple timelines and making sure they all connect properly and they all speak thematically to what the story's about. That's a lot of hard work and a lot of writing and rewriting and throwing away ideas. And Hallie brought so much of that on board to be able to pull something like this off. Calm down. Calm down.
I'm just going to savor this moment forever.
But there's something I think that Hallie touched on, which is like right now, like we'll hear a line or something people react to. And we look at each other along with like Josh Scher and Ryan James, who wrote a lot of like in-game dialogue and the systemic dialogue. And we don't know who wrote what anymore because we all kind of touched each other's work and rewrote each other in the hope of like making the best possible story we can.
Yeah, though I will say if you liked it, I probably wrote it. If you didn't like it, Neil wrote it.
Yeah. That's if you're not sure who wrote it, just take credit. Yeah.
That's probably a good bet.
Well, you mentioned that the ending morphed a bit. Are you able to talk a little bit about just how that changed over time? What's different?
Neil, you want to take that one or you want me to do it?
You do it.
So when I signed on, a lot of it was very similar. I mean, we did a lot of iterations on what that last act looked like, but the final beat was that Ellie would kill Abby.
Oh, wow.
And about halfway through production, we changed tack and had Ellie let go at the last second to preserve or to elucidate that some little part of the old Ellie, the Ellie with, you know, humanity, the Ellie that is impacted by Joel and who Joel was, still exists inside of this character who's been so overtaken by her quest for revenge.
Sure.
So remember that the whole conversation started with like trying to figure out between Yara and Lev, and we're still trying to figure out who those characters are. Mm-hmm. And should both of them survive? Should one of them survive? Should neither of them survive? And we had all those different permutations for those characters. And at some point, like as Hallie's advocating for Lev, I said, like,
five.
It feels like if he makes it with Abby, there's something about that conversation that just like inspired, like, I feel like maybe Ellie shouldn't kill her. And I remember like Hallie was shocked, like, wait, that's on the table? We can change that? And then because the way we work is like someone will pitch an idea and no matter how crazy it is, we're like, we say, let's play it through. So we say, okay, if this person, let's say, lives, then like, okay, what does that mean? And we talk about the domino effect of how that propagates throughout the whole story. And then letting Abby live, initially the instinct was like, oh, that feels wrong thematically for what we're after. But at the end of the day, it felt more honest for the character. And therefore, the theme of what we're trying to say shifted a little bit. But our top priority always is like, are we honest to the character? There's certain things we want to hit, but they can only work if they're consistent for the characters we're writing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. Just speaking about characters, like you guys in general, Naughty Dog seems fairly willing to, you know, F with your characters a little bit more. And I just mean, not only put them through the ringer, but also make them do things or allow them to do things that players might not like. How did you guys strike that balance to try to like keep your characters likable and also, you know, push them that way? Or did you even care if people liked them at the end of the day?
Oh, you're taking this one for sure.
You know, I mean, I mean, we always have some conversations. I don't know if it's about likable. It's more like,
no.
Are they, is the motivation consistent? Are we just trying to force things for plot, or are we just doing something that's cool? And then we'll usually, if we say that's inconsistent for the character, we'll throw those ideas out, or discuss, do we need to change the character, or what is our understanding of this character? So it became less important about, are they likable versus do we buy their motivation? Do we buy what they're doing? Are they acting out of character? Are they evolving? Are they changing? That's way more important to us than are they likable?
Yeah, I want to second Neil and also say, like, I think likable should come second to vulnerable. Like, mm-hmm. Is there a vulnerability that we can understand or relate to?
No. Yeah, sure. But on some level, you wanted people to like Abby, right? I mean, wasn't that kind of the point? You wanted to try to make her likable.
But I guess maybe likable is just the wrong word. And sometimes we get
deemable.
Ethics. Like we don't say the word fun.
Neil definitely does.
But it's like, are you intrigued? Are you buying into who Abby is? Because sometimes likable, you might just say, okay, then she can't do anything wrong to make sure you like her. Or she's always moral, like, but that's not what makes someone, that's not what makes me intrigued with someone. And often, like, I'll read a book or watch a movie where it's not a moral person. I wouldn't want this person around me. Walter White, I think, is a great example of that, which is like, yeah, I guess he is likable that I'm intrigued and I want to see what happens next with him, but I don't think he's good.
Yeah.
And that's why it's like, I don't know if we need to say, for you to say, like, Ellie is good or Abby is good. It's just, do you understand them? Do you understand their motivation, why they're moving and making the kind of choices that they're making?
Yeah, I think for Abby, it's a narrative of redemption in the same way that in the first game, Joel's is a narrative of redemption, mm-hmm. which I think is inherently more likable. But I think for both characters, it's two steps forward, one step back consistently.
Yeah. On that same point with Joel and Abby, was there ever a point when you were developing the character? Was it, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I very much, Abby took a very similar journey that Joel did, as you talked about. Was that developed on purpose, or was it as you were developing Abby, it was like, oh, like we can interweave this with Joel and how that she killed the person that she's becoming now?
I don't think it was ever a conscious thing, correct me if I'm wrong, Hallie, where we said, okay, she's going to, let's make her like Joel. It kind of evolved over time as we were adding Yara and Lev. Like when we added Yara and Lev, we weren't sure how big those roles would be. Mm-hmm. And then Lev's role started growing over time. And then we like realized, oh, there's like this connection here between, like we shot the Abby going with Lev to the hospital to get the medicine for Yara before we knew how far Lev would make it into the story. And then as we're shooting that and the chemistry between Ian Alexander and Laura Bailey, who played those characters, convinced us to say, oh, there's something really special here. Let's build it out in kind of both directions of that part of the story. And that's kind of like what's great about how we make our games is we write as we go so we can evolve and change based on what we're capturing and seeing or how the level is evolving to make sure it all fits. So sometimes we might have like a segment of the story or the game we've developed and be like, oh, that's so awesome. And it became like kind of got to this place organically. Now let's go back in time and do the proper setup for what turned out to be a payoff.
Cool.
I mean, that first scene where you meet those guys, where you meet Yar and Lev, was a demo that you guys had shown off. Like it was like your first or second demo, which in retrospect to me seems kind of crazy just because you kept Abby so secretive. Is that something where the game was just evolving in a way that you didn't expect? Or can you speak to why you showed that particular scene off so early?
Yeah, the demos are always, to me, marketing is part of your storytelling because like you have to show something. You can't show nothing. Maybe if we had it our way, we would show nothing and we should, okay, Last of Us 2 is out, play it. You haven't seen anything, but that's not realistic. So for us, it's like, okay, how do we release different pieces that create a mystery, introduce new characters or new mechanics, and you have to kind of like start theorizing and putting it together. And that's part of the fun, I think, as a fan that I've had, like I know there's been a lot of comparisons, but I think back to like Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2 specifically. And I like being misled. I like seeing stuff like out of context and trying to think like, how does it fit? Who are these characters? Who's coming back? Who's not coming back for a sequel? So that was a lot of our thought process of like, and some, to add one more thing, sometimes there are production reasons to release a certain asset. So he's like, okay, there's a cadence of marketing where we got to release something here. What is being worked on all over the game? What do we feel that we could put out that's not going to be a big spoiler, but would get a conversation going and be exciting? And that's where we felt like, oh, we could actually introduce Abby here without giving any context and let people try to guess, who is this character? How does she connect to Joel and Ellie? Because we've already revealed that Joel and Ellie are in the game. When does this take place? Who is this other religious? So it just felt like it was raising a lot of interesting questions and buys us time before we release the next marketing beat. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, that's...
Forgetting anything that you remember from when we made that?
No, I think you crushed it.
Well, that's interesting because you mentioned subverting player expectations, and I'm trying to think of another company that has done that. I think you're probably right in just the Kojima aspect, but you guys went so far as to like record voice lines with Troy Baker and like insert that trailer that obviously was kind of a red herring, or basically it was completely wrong. So it's just interesting if there's, to you, that's all in the idea of preserving the surprises for players. And I don't know, is there a limit to that on how far you can push that? Do you feel like you're lying to players, but maybe that's a good thing?
It's white lies. I'm sure there are limits. Like, for example, I can't think of it, but I know there's been movies that like advertise like, oh, this actor is in this movie, and then they're only in it 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bummer. And we knew Joel was in the game, and Joel's presence is felt throughout the whole game, and we have all these flashbacks. So that's where it felt like it was okay to mislead you to protect his death. But at the same time, it felt important, like, we're not going to show off Joel gameplay to not miss, like, in Seattle, to really kind of go down the line and mislead you. So I know, like, some people have had issues with that, and I get that. But for us, it comes from the motivation of trying as much as we can to give you, like, some snippets of what the story's about, to give you tone, but protect the story as much as we can.
For sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can go, Ben.
Well, I was just going to say that kind of leads into subverting expectations. Mm-hmm. And Last of Us Part 2 specifically subverted a lot of my expectations, but not even just in story stuff, but like I'm thinking specifically gameplay stuff. Like there's that scene at the workbench where you get attacked, which a lot of people are talking about online. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you guys can talk about just how you guys work as a team to subvert and like even change, like, okay, the player's going to think this is going to happen, but we're going to deliver this.
You start it, and I'll come in after.
Again, it speaks to the culture we have at Naughty Dog, which is anyone can pitch ideas, whether they're gameplay or narrative or sometimes even tech. And that idea didn't come from the writing team. That came from design. And I'm not even sure who had the initial idea. But at some point, someone showed it to me, and it was like, that's awesome. That the idea that you're not, usually you have like your upgrade menus and you're safe in the menu. Mm-hmm. And for you to be not safe in that menu felt like such a cool moment, because we were trying so much to make the upgrade of your weapons to be this grounded thing where you're seeing Ellie like animated and she's taking the gun apart and doing all this stuff. So it makes sense that someone could grab you and pull you out of that. And then it became about, okay, so how do we build a narrative around that moment that was constructed by someone, and I believe from design.
Hmm.
And there's just so many examples like that, where like somebody had like some pitch like that, and I just felt, oh, that speaks to what we're trying to do. How do we get that into the game?
For sure.
Yeah, remember the hats?
The hats on the dinosaurs. That was another one.
Yeah. Mm. That one I love.
And then like, that one was like, it started with like, with one time doing it on one dinosaur, and then that design team like put it on every single dinosaur, like there are too many spots to do it. And then we're trying to find the right amount of putting hats on dinosaurs.
That's funny.
And they were like climbing the T-Rex. That was like an idea that came from like iterating on that level. Wasn't necessarily in the script.
Wow. Sure. I noticed you had some Jurassic Park references there, but you didn't say Jurassic Park.
Is there say what it is? It could be any movie. You don't know.
Is that just a legal thing, or is there a reason you can't say, or do you just like the sort of tongue in cheek, like, hey, wink, wink, look at this reference?
Usually it's a legal issue that they're like anytime, and sometimes it just might be processed. Like anytime we mention something or even allude to something, we might have to go through legal, and that's like a long process to. I remember when we did Uncharted 4 and we put the Monkey Island references and I thought we could just sneak them in, and then somebody on the team high up saw it and be like, no, you got to get permission. And now Disney had bought LucasArts. So we had to get permission from Disney, which is notoriously hard. And it was like, actually it wasn't that bad. We got it pretty fast, but just did like any, yeah. So anytime if they were to say, hey, it's Jurassic Park 2, the Lost World, and who knows what that process is going to be like to get that.
I gotcha.
Go ahead, Alex. I know you had a couple questions.
Yeah, so you touched on the birthday flashback, but I feel like this this game, what makes it so special is the light moments, the moments of genuine humanity on the backdrop of this world. And I think a lot of coverage has kind of bemoaned the violence, but I think it has actually accented those moments and elevated them. How did you guys make that work? Like, how did you guys make sure that you weren't getting too gratuitous with the violence, but also making it like balancing those two notions out?
That's a tricky one. Oh, you're gesturing to me like I should do this? Okay, fine. I'll do this. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we thought about it in terms of balance, right? I think we thought about it largely in terms of the POV of the girls. So for Ellie, it was very much, okay, you know, you're in the present tense on this vengeance quest. There's going to be, and we want to talk in a grounded way about PTSD and trauma. And so to do that, we have to make the violence feel as grounded as well as possible so that you're step by step in the hard decision she has to make and they feel as real as you can. That being said, you want to, we've missed 4 years of her relationship with Joel, and it's so important to understand, since he is her motor through all this, the good and the bad, the complicated nature of their relationship. So it was very much about like having these moments that pull her, you know, what am I trying to say? That buoy her, right? So there's the moments with Joel. There are these, you know, sweet moments with Dina, all of these all of these moments that keep pushing her forward or trying to pull her back. And then in terms of Abby, yeah, I guess I don't think we ever thought about it in terms of balance. Like, I think anytime you can find lightness and you can find humor in this world, I think we took a swing at it. There were definitely, like, I remember I wrote the first draft of in-game dialogue for the Seattle arrival, and I wrote it very much lighter than it is now because I was like, well, they've been on the road for 3 months. And yes, we're on this revenge quest, but they are also madly in love, and it didn't work. It felt inconsistent. Yeah. So, you know, trying to find those varieties wherever we could, but keeping it still even was really the focus rather than maybe balance. Neil,
As far as violence, that's a hard one because different people have different lines where like what might be going too far for you would not be going far enough for someone else. So it's really about where our taste ended up lying. And anytime something was like really intense, we would review it and have a lot of conversation about what does the story need? What's the minimum the story needs? So for example, Joel's death, when Ellie sees it, it was important to see just enough. So there's like that image is like seared in your mind and no more. So when actually Abby does that final hit, you don't really see it. It's like out of focus in the foreground. Same thing when we had
Nora
torturing Nora. Yeah. You used to see that, and it felt like too much. And it felt like that moment is really not about that. It's about what's going on behind Ellie's eyes. So it felt tonally just better to focus on Ellie and what's going on with her as she's hitting Nora instead of showing the pipe hitting someone's head or
their arm.
Yeah,
sure. For me, the part that was like hard with the violence was killing the dogs.
Ugh,
and
yeah,
that's like was there ever a point where you guys were talking to me like, maybe we just shouldn't have dogs in the game because this is hard to stomach? Or is that the point? Like, you really wanted to push that envelope a little bit and be like, this is how far Ellie has fallen.
Yes, we had those conversations. For me personally, it's the yelping. There's something about that sound that's really hard. Like, even now for me, like, I kind of wince when I play, and I've seen it and heard it, I don't even know how many times.
Yeah.
I remember having a pretty intense conversation with someone about, we're adding all these accessibility features to say, you know, if you have a motor skill kind of handicapped, then how can we help you play the game? If you have a hard time seeing, how can we help you? If you have a hard time hearing. And someone made the suggestion, like, you know, maybe we should remove dog violence. That should be an accessibility feature because some people have a really hard time with that. And my stance was like, we can't, because that is, it's not like that, like, someone, sure, it might be past their comfort level, but it's not like they can't play through that. And ultimately, the game can't shy away from the violence these characters are committing. Like, we kind of have to lean into that because that's what the story's about. Like, I don't, and that's why there's no gore. We could easily add like a gore feature, like we turn that off and there's no blood when you shoot people, and no dismemberment. But at some point, it's like you start losing what this thing is. And I think you start shying too much away from the feeling that we're after, which is sometimes discomfort.
Mm. Have you guys seen the Grounded, that Obsidian's Grounded? They're putting out an arachnophobia mode that turns the spiders into these weird orb creatures. I don't know if you've seen that.
No.
I just thought that was interesting. Yeah. Hearing you talk is like, you should have just turned the dogs into spiders and then everybody would have loved killing them.
And then everybody was just going to like kill every single one of them.
I would have stopped playing. I couldn't handle that.
I would kind of continue on with just like the themes of the game and just the reality of 2020 and how insane the year has been, right? Was there a point during development where just the realities of our world and just quarantine and kind of the heaviness of what you guys were working on, did that wear on the team? How did you guys navigate that?
We were pretty lucky in the respect that the game was almost completely done by the time COVID-19 was making its way like heavily into the US. And we've talked about this before, even before it was mandated, we're like, okay, we don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable coming into the office. People need to start buying groceries and other stuff. Like, let's send everybody home. And again, to give props to our operations team and our IT department, we don't have at the time, we didn't have the infrastructure to be able to work from home. Like, you know, we have dev kits and all this stuff. And like within really a couple of weeks, we're able to get everybody working from home. And the thing we told them is like, take care of yourself, take care of your family. If for some reason we can't hit the date, we'll figure it out. But to everyone's credit, we were up and running really fast, and people were just excited to finish the game because we've been working on it for so long. We're so close. Unfortunately, right then what happened is like just the retail infrastructure was uncertain. And that's when the call was made to delay the game indefinitely. And that was really hard. It's because, again, everyone was so excited to finally get the game out there. Now we don't even know how long we have to sit on it. And we've never been in a situation where we just have to sit on the game. It's done and we can't put it out. It was such a weird feeling. So we just took that, okay, we got some time. And again, we encourage everyone to just take it easy. Let's keep polishing. Keep polishing until someone says we can put it out there. And luckily that ended up only being a delay of 3 weeks, I believe. I forget exactly what that was, but it wasn't as much as we initially feared. So that was hard. But as far as like the, you know, the superficial similarities between like the outbreak in the game and the pandemic in the real world, like that never really crossed our minds, as far as, because the game is really not about that anymore. It's about tribalism and all these other things that, you know, you can make the argument that things that are happening now in the real world. And but for me, it's like things that have been happening throughout the history of mankind and will continue to happen going forward. So I don't think it's something unique to the world we live in now.
Yeah, sure. Well, and some of that, it felt like you guys were trying to make, you know, a commentary in the game, and that, I mean, hasn't been received super well. Have you guys been surprised by the feedback the game has received?
No, it's been kind of quiet. No one has said anything.
Yeah, Ben, I don't know what you're talking
my
about.
My DMs are really empty.
Nah. You're nice at the cabin in the woods.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear what you have to say, but I'll just ramble for a little bit. It's like, we knew the game is not for everybody. We knew we're making a game that's harder to play, not difficulty, but just the content in the first game. Because the first game, despite Joel being a morally ambiguous character, it's a more traditional hero journey where he doesn't start making really morally dubious choices until the end. Right? The whole game, you're trying to save this 14-year-old girl who's you're trying to get to this lab that's going to save all of mankind. Like, everyone can buy into that. Only at the end, when he decides, no, I'm going to fuck over all of mankind to save this girl, that's when you start getting a split where, like, some people are for it, some people are not for it. Whereas this game, it's like almost from the get-go, your character that you're playing is start to make morally dubious decisions that not everyone's on board with. So from that standpoint, we know the game would be divisive. We knew it'd be divisive because we're killing a fan favorite not right out the bat, but within the first 2 hours. What we didn't know, and I couldn't have foreseen, maybe someone else could, is that it would turn into this sort of, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this, but like Gamergate-esque cultural war, where as the game was coming out, there was weird kind of rumors and misinformation coming out about it. And you saw certain YouTube channels just running with those rumors as if they're real, like, oh, the game contains homophobic Christian cult and they're after Ellie because she's gay and you're going around killing Christians, which wasn't true at all. We're like, you know, when the game comes out, people just see it, it's not true. So we're kind of dismissive of it. And then the leaks happened. And then they're like, that rumor got combined with the fact that Abby, because she's muscular, a lot of people ran with the story that she's trans. And therefore this narrative started forming of like, oh, Naughty Dog has this agenda to kill the white, straight male and replace it with a trans character while you're going around killing Christians. And it just started, like, again, turned into this cultural war. It's still kind of going on now, even like a few weeks after the game has come out. And it's just a little bizarre because so many of the things were not true, but you find that the people that were like, shouting the loudest about those things or the aspect of the game are still having their heels kind of dug in the ground, talking about an SJW agenda and things that for us, it's easy to dismiss because for us, we're making a game that reflects the real world. And if you think trying to reflect the real world is an agenda, then I don't know what to say. Then you're just not with the times, I guess. I don't know. I just kind of rambled for a while. Hallie? just to put a bun on that, sorry. I could have not have predicted that. I could not have predicted that would have been such a loud kind of back and forth. But with all that, it's like the game, like 99% of the messages we're getting are people that connect with the characters and love the story that we've made. And so many people tell us that they love it more than the first game. And even people that said, like, you know, it didn't quite live up to my expectations. I appreciate what you guys were trying to do. Those are the conversations that we love kind of like reading and getting into. The more kind of extreme hateful stuff is pretty easy to dismiss at this point.
Yeah, to sort of largely echo what Neil said, I can't help but wonder if the leaks hadn't happened, what the reception might be, because I think to Neil's point, people had preconceived notions or they wrote it off based on clips out of context or bullet points or supposition. And
oh yeah, there's all those outlines, those fake outlines for the whole story that came up. They said both Joel and Ellie died. That was going around for a while. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, you kill Joel, and then immediately you play as Abby and you hunt down Ellie for the rest of the game. And you had all these people, these very famous YouTubers, I'm not going to name anybody, that were like, I already hate this game. Nothing will change my mind about how much I hate this game. And lo and behold, they still hate this game now, even though it turned out to not be true with the outlines that they read out loud on one of their videos.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we spent 4 years-ish trying to craft like our marketing and everything so that you would be in alignment with Ellie with the beginning of this game. You would see that she and Dina are great. You would experience this Joel shock, you know, and we certainly play tested enough that we knew kind of the ups and downs of how people experienced it. But I don't think we could have guessed how people would come in having leaks on the brain or having rumor on the brain. And again, to Neil's point, like, we definitely expected debate. We definitely expected, like, people are Team Ellie, people are Team Abby, people think they're both irredeemable, people think they just should get along. Like, you think we should have killed Abby at the end? You know, we were ready for those, that kind of discourse. And that's the discourse we're excited about, because the whole point is to say all of these characters are ethically gray, and it's really about whose shoes you're walking in at the time and whose story you really understand that changes how you feel about a certain person. Sure. But
I guess just to touch on one more thing, and it's like, I'm always a little hesitant because there's some people that argue in bad faith about this stuff, but like, I did not anticipate transphobic memes and comments to be so rampant, or homophobic memes and comments to be, or anti-Semitic stuff being hurled my way, or death threats to myself and our actors and other members of the team. Not in my wildest dream could I have anticipated the scale of it, that it wouldn't be just a handful of people. It's been dozens, if not hundreds of people. And that's just brings awareness to the kind of toxicity that can exist around something so popular.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that comes with the territory.
And that's really sad to hear. Sorry.
No. My bad. No, but to that point, it's like, I think what's been really illuminating, but maybe in a bad way, is like, it's very easy to live in a bubble and go, oh, I don't see this hate, or I don't, you know, I remember, like, but then you're in it and you're like witnessing the level of transphobia or homophobia or anti-Semitism or racism. And, you know, you're getting it firsthand. Like, I'm getting some of the stuff in my DMs I could not say to you out loud right now.
Oh.
Like, and.
Because it's in another language, or.
Sometimes it is.
It sometimes seems that way, right?
Yeah. You know, they found horrible words in all languages, I think. So I think that's been the real surprise is the level of that kind of toxicity. But again, to Neil's point, I will say, you know, my DMs at this point and the messages I'm getting on social media are now 90% positive by people who have played the game, or even if they didn't. You know, even if they didn't love the game in their messaging me, it's still like, hey, I appreciated the effort. I saw what you guys did. You know, it's not where I wanted the story to go, but,
to shift it to something a little more positive is like the amount of fan art for all the characters to see, like, Abby Lev fan art and so much of it. People recording music with the guitar mechanic. There's just so much love around the game. You know, sometimes it's so easy to focus on the negative, like, even though it's a minor voice. That's the stuff that, like, kind of is inspiring and buoys up, like, during.
What kind of research did you guys do into some of these themes? Did you just talk to people or do some research just so you could, like, be gentle when you were handling the topic? Because it is some serious topics.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we had, I don't remember Varun's last name off the top of my head, but we had like a scholar come in and help us build out the religion so that, you know, we actively didn't want it to necessarily be a commentary on any specific religion. We wanted it to be its own thing, separate and apart. So we had a religious scholar come in and talk to us about how to build that. We, you know, our team is incredibly, our team is incredibly diverse, comes from many different backgrounds, different sexual orientations, gender identities, races, creeds. And it's Neil's office is fairly open door, you know, so it's like if anybody felt like maybe we were even slightly headed in the wrong direction or something was off, like we heard about it, which was wonderful. Like the discourse was great. Internally,
anytime someone would recommend something that speaks to the themes we're after as well, like there's a book called On Killing that talks about how soldiers are desensitized and have been desensitized in different ways over the years. That was really informative as far as, you know, what our characters are going through. Documentaries on trauma or again, like how do families deal with loss, and that was really kind of inspiring and informative to these characters. So we would just consume as much as we can. And so you're trying to do that, and then you're trying to forget as much of it, and then just live as these characters in these situations and try to treat them as honestly as you can.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And also I think, you know, like Neil and I both also pulled from our own, you know, histories and backgrounds as well. Like this dude's from the West Bank. I've had PTSD. Like it's, you know, and
it's anonymous. Sort of,
it's, you know, we got stuff. We got stuff is what I'm saying.
Sure. Is there, I mean, this is shifting the conversation, but is there, the game is so big that it's hard to imagine you didn't fit anything in that you wanted to, but I'm sure there's stuff that you weren't able to fit in. Gosh. Like what is it that you wanted to get in there and you just weren't able to?
Man, so much.
Wow.
Should we just go down? I mean, I can just go down the list.
Is there anything like now that you think we should have given the time that you would have, because there's a lot that we cut and I think the game is better for it.
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, what I would have pulled back?
Like, is there something you would have put back?
I don't think there's anything I would have. I mean, no, I think, you know, I'm always team cut. So, like, I'll always pull stuff before I'll add. I think I would have maybe liked to have put. I mean, this is not what they just asked us, but I think I would have liked to have maybe found more time to flesh out Ellie and Joel's life in Jackson before everything happened, like seeing her dynamic with him a little more or seeing her dynamic with Dina when they weren't dating, I think would have all been kind of delicious. But I think that's more just because that would be like kind of delicious. I think of the stuff that we cut, I think it would have been nice to see Scar Island not in a war zone. So there was a time when we had 5 days instead of three for both girls, and Ellie went to Scar Island as well. But she did it before the assault on the island. And so you got to, as her, see their domestic life, essentially like in the way that you're seeing Abby go through the stadium or Ellie go through Jackson, you were able to sort of witness what their sweet home domestic life looked like, you know, taking care of family members and raising animals and living their lives. But it didn't progress her story. But I think
You look at the art book, there was a lot of so much thinking that went into the Seraph fights, and even like when they come of age, how they cut their faces, and they wear these like white loincloths, and they're kind of like they're in the middle of a lake.
Loincloths are like undies, so they're like shirts.
I like shirts. So English is a different language. And it just, there's so much that you can't show. So sometimes it's like, it's a little unfortunate that you like spend so much time developing something and you can only show like a sliver of it.
Sure.
But ultimately, again, we're the slaves to Ellie and Abby's journey. So anything that's not helping that eventually gets cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything mechanically?
Ooh. I was just going to say anything mechanically or their crafting items you guys weren't able to get around to?
Pallet. Pushing a pallet in the water.
No, that was never in this game.
No, I know, but it could have been, you know. Dina.
Yeah, Dina can't swim.
Remember, there was a period where Dina was going to be, like, very good at technology. Huh. And she was going to be able to crack things or make stuff, make bombs.
I remember also, like, very early versions of the game, Ellie had a dog. And there are all these ally dog mechanics of like how it could fit under fences and go get something for you and bring it back. It never went very far, but we had some prototypes that was like, oh, that's cool. And then we ended up giving the dog to like the Abby sequence, but it was more Mel's dog, and you know, have like a back and forth coming like mechanics with it. But that's some of the stuff that was interesting. There was like a whole like mechanic of holding people up and getting information, Metal Gear Solid 5 style. There are different versions of maps and how you could use the map, and the map like would kind of draw itself as you went through the world, and we had more kind of open world ideas for this game. And there's like way more. I'm just, my mind's kind of blanking.
For sure.
I think maybe I would have expounded even more on the journal. Made that journal a little more, maybe given Abby some version of that.
Yeah. The journal came on really late.
Yeah, oh, wow. So late.
Really? That surprises me because it feels like weeks you guys are always doing something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're always doing something.
It was one of those things that we wanted to do for a long time. It's just like you were saying, the game is so big and has so many things. We just kind of end up slamming it in at the end. It just felt important to have another avenue into Ellie's mind. Mm-hmm. And how does she express herself, you know, sometimes through song and poetry and drawings. So it felt like kind of a nice B, C level storytelling that the player can engage with if they're interested.
Yeah, and Ellie is inherently a more internal character than Abby. You know, Abby has outlets where she can start to talk to people more, but Ellie just sort of withers and gets more and more and more locked in. So it became important.
For sure.
That's interesting to me, especially like with how the game ends and she's kind of like by herself now. And I was curious, at the end of the game, do you feel like she's, I want to say happy, which is definitely the wrong word to use, but do you feel she's in a good place? Has she gotten to a place where she's better?
What is better? Are any of us better? As we get older, don't we all just become more and more cynical and jaded? No. I think she's where Abby starts the game. You know, in this sort of like loss, but I know that didn't work for me. That didn't help. So what else might, in a more productive way, I think.
To us, the ending was much darker for Ellie when she killed Abby at the end, because it ended with her being truly lost. And then the version we end up going with, it's like she retained more of her humanity. And from our perspective, and again, it's open to interpretation, it's a more hopeful ending where she's on the path, like Hallie is saying, a path of redemption.
Did the symbolism of the moth then come after you guys made that choice, or was that in stone before that?
Moth was really early.
Yeah,
moth was early, and we kind of just again that came about because we knew we wanted Ellie to have a tattoo to hide the bite, and we brought to the studio Natalie Hall, who's a tattoo artist, designed a tattoo, and she came up with the moth and the ferns as these kind of symbols. And then over time, we're like, how can we integrate this moth in more and more interesting ways? And then we, Ashley Swadowski, who designed the guitar, she's one of our lead concept artists, had the idea of putting the moth on the guitar, like, oh, and then it becomes cool. Like, oh, Joel gives her this guitar. That's how she got the idea for the tattoo. So that's like, again, one idea of the tattoo just kind of grew out of that. And then we decided to have that as the opening and closing image of the whole story, because it became a form of symbol for Ellie and Joel's relationship.
The other thing that seemed important to me too was her fingers. I noticed that there's moments where she's kind of biting at it or something, which seems like foreshadowing, because she loses some fingers at the end. So I'm just curious, from your guys' perspective, what's the importance of those fingers? Do they mean something more than loss?
Schneel.
Well, it just that was something that was there, I think, pretty early on. The idea that Joel would gift her this guitar, and by the end, she wouldn't be able to play it. And there were all sorts of different versions of how she lost her fingers, but in almost every version, she lost it in some horrible way.
Dog attack.
Interesting. What's interesting is, like, sometimes we work so hard to create parallel storylines and symbolism and things that kind of speak to each other. But recently I saw someone made this connection, which I didn't even think about, which is throughout the story, you see Ellie's dealing with her PTSD and she has these like kind of shakes in her hand. And then when she shows up at farm, even though she's missing her fingers, her hand is still. And that kind of speaks to like where she's at, that despite everything she's gone through, it's like there's been some exorcism of these demons. We didn't even necessarily planned for that, but it's kind of nice that it landed that way.
No, Neil, you're supposed to say we totally meant.
Oh yeah, that was all planned. Planning was written ahead of time, and then it was just executed that way.
Yeah, we've got a perfect outline. That's exactly what you see in game right now.
Do you guys feel? I not necessarily asking is there going to be more, but do you guys feel like this story is now full circle? Do you guys feel in a more complete place maybe than after the first one? Or is that too hard to answer at this point?
No, I guess I could say a couple different things. Like, you know, as I was saying, when we were finishing the first game was always meant to be this complete statement, because you never know, are we even going to have the opportunity? Like, if the game bombs, you might never be able to make a sequel. You might never even have that option. And I would never want to be in this place where I'm like, oh man, we left it on the cliffhanger and now we don't get to finish that story. And the approach for this game as well was the same way, which is like, I don't know if we're ever going to make another Last of Us. So this if we never make one, this should stand as a final statement. Mm-hmm. Having said that, you can't help but start thinking about other stories with same characters, different characters, other parts of the world. Again, I'm not saying we're doing anything, but you just can't help but do that. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're currently at.
I'd take more comics too while you're at it.
I was going to say comics, DLC.
There's so many ideas for that. Like, we had an idea for like a Tess origin story to do as a comic. And it, obviously there's the stuff in Uncharted 4 with a pregnant woman with a gas mask.
American Dreams.
And
sure.
Yeah. So we actually, and some of the stuff we actually have written. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know what is the right avenue to put that out there if we ever get to put that out there. So we'll see.
My vote's a comic just about Bear, just his entire life before.
Oh, Sweet Bear.
Sweet Bear. That was cruel. You guys, that was cruel. Beautiful, but...
You know, wait, Neil, wasn't Bear's original name Tofu and you made me change it?
I don't think so.
I think it's original. It was always Bear. Bear's original name
is Tofu. They're both great names.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
Well, I know we're probably... We're out of time, basically. But I don't know, Alex. Did you have any last questions?
If it's cool, if I ask one more,
Cool.
You can ask five more.
kind of going back to. So I watched Neil. I watched you guys on Kind of Funny's spoiler cast. And you know, with Troy and Ashley literally tearing up, like it's very evident how important these characters are to them and you. Like, there's no doubt. In when you guys were shooting and in the writing process, because you guys are closer than just coworkers, was there ever specific moments where Troy and Ashley pushed back? Ashley Johnson and Troy Baker, did they push back on something? Did they help you guys think differently? Is there any specific moments like that?
Yes. I don't know if I'd describe it as pushback. Maybe with Troy, there's a little bit of pushback. With Ashley, it's more like, I'm not sure about this. What if we did this other thing? Like the porch scene at the end where Ellie's talking to Joel, might have talked about them kind of funny. I don't remember. But in the script, they hugged. Mm. And then Ashley was the one who was like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like Ellie is at a place where she would hug him.
Yeah.
And we shot a version where, like, because they're always game to try stuff, which is why I love working with them so much, which is if any one of us has an idea while we're shooting, we're like, and we have the time, we're like, let's give it a shot. Who knows? Maybe it'll feel better. Maybe it'll feel worse. But the only way to truly know is to attempt it. Mm-hmm. And she did this version where they hugged and it's so tender. And then she like pushed him away and ran off the porch. And it's, I've said this, like on its own, it's like a better scene as part of the game and where she's at. The one we went with is better.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you go with the version where she did the finger guns?
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then with Troy, we had a lot of conversations about the death scene, obviously. I think that was because Troy loves Joel so much. I think some of the stuff that was on the page was really hard for him, like because Hallie wrote that. At least that draft that just described in detail what physically happened to him. And Troy was worried that would all be on screen. And I had to like, kind of like talk him down and say like, no, like, trust me, we're going to do it respectfully. But part of it is it's gotta be disgusting. It's gotta be upsetting for Ellie and the player. So those were like, kind of like deep, long conversations to make sure he was comfortable with everything that was happening there. And the other one is, the opening of the game, Troy was worried that it was too much of a previously on The Last of Us. And when you first read it, like I see where that concern could come from. And I think we actually had way more lines and we weren't sure how much we needed to like remind the player of the first game, but it was important to dramatize it, to make that conversation feel as natural and character driven as possible. And that was so great of working with Troy and Jeffrey Pierce, who plays Tommy. And they had so much fun playing with that scene. And we would like between takes, we would add line and remove lines and like talk about their motivations. Why is Joel confessing now to his brother? And that was a really fun shoot day, even though initially there was some resistance to it. I think ultimately we got like a really great scene between those two characters.
Wow. Cool. Hallie, real quick, was that scene, was Joel's death scene hard to write? Like all the description? I feel like that sounds pretty morbid.
By the way, I wanted to keep Joel alive. Ellie's the one that just pushed to kill Joel.
This question's a trap. I will actually say, I will say I wrote a much more brutal version of that scene.
Whoa.
And Neil made me pull a bunch of stuff out. I remember, I won't go into what there was, but there were some lines of dialogue that were like, that got yanked. No, wow. I really like writing graphic violence. I choose this path.
I'm so tempted to say what that stuff was.
Oh, I mean, I'm so curious now. That's such a tease.
People are going to hate us because we're laughing about it right now, and it's so fucking sad. I know.
They're going to say, oh my God, you're disrespecting the character. And it's like, that's such a... By the way, that's such a crazy criticism. You're disrespecting the character when something bad happens to them. Because if that was the case, then it's like nothing bad could ever happen to a character you love. And so much of, I think, storytelling in this genre is you got to put the characters through the ringer. There's no way... And we actually said this from the get-go, from the first time we were able to talk about this game, like we were like excited. Joel and Ellie were coming back. I'm like, are you sure you're excited? Because you know what happens in this world when characters, like if there's more story to tell in this world, bad stuff is going to happen to those characters. But to me, it's like every step of the way, we do nothing but respect those characters and try to respect them. To me is treating them honestly and as the complex humans that they are. And sometimes it means that your death is just brutal in this world. Not everyone can have a hero's death where they're shooting 20 clickers while saving Ellie.
No.
I think that's a different kind of game than the last one.
Well, I think it implies like that everybody's, you know, so much of this game is about Ellie saying, my life would have mattered. My life would have mattered. That like somehow death makes your life meaningful, or how you die makes your death meaningful. But this is such a hostile world. And people have had to do so much to stay alive that sometimes you're just going to be Jesse who gets shot and goes down, you know, within 10 seconds. And there was no way to prepare for it. Yeah. Like the whole point of this world is that it's brutal and it rips things away from you unfairly, but you still have to find reasons to pick yourself back up and keep going. So it would be disingenuous to give all of our heroes death. That's not, there's no danger to that. Then it's like, well, no matter what I do, I'm going to be fucking regal if I go down.
The other thing about The Last of Us, just to talk a little bit more about that, is, you know, something Riley says in Left Behind, which is like, you make every moment count. And that's right. The flashbacks between Joel and Ellie is like, in some level, Joel knows his time is limited, right? And he understands that in investing in Ellie and loving her by the end of the first game, it could end in any moment. That's the decision he made. And that's why throughout the first game, he just pushes people away. But he made every moment count. Despite everything that went down, he made those precious moments connected with Ellie.
That feels echoed later on with Abby's line. It's like, we let you live and you wasted it. And I really like that line. I just think Laura Bailey's delivery of it is really good too. But
she was incredible.
But yeah, I kind of feel like
she's
that's the inverse.
Let me say something about Laura. She's a complete hack. Edit all her lines out. Well,
you didn't even want her in the first place.
Now, Laura's amazing. And the vulnerability she brought to that character just floored us.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, guys, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. We kept you longer than we should have, but you guys worked really hard on, probably too hard on this game.
I think it shows. Definitely. 100%.
But we appreciate it. It's an awesome game. It's something really special. So thanks for your time and good luck on whatever's next.
Go take a vacation.
Thanks so much. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's almost time.
Yeah. We'll stuff
it. Whenever Corona ends.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks guys. Yeah. Really good.
Well, thank you. And everybody, thanks for watching.
Yeah. Thank you.